waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Website, RickSmithShow.com. So, Canton, Mississippi, the focus right now of, well, a major labor battle going on as the UAW, the United Auto Workers, are fighting to organize the workers there. And, well, we're seeing Nissan putting up what, you know, we expect, you know, another, you know, expensive anti-union campaign, maybe not the size that we saw at Boeing. But, you know, lots of money being spent. And again, it comes down to workers fighting for better wages, hours, conditions, and, well, employers fighting for absolute dictatorial control. It's going to be interesting to see how this vote turns out. And here to talk about what's going on down there in Canton, we've asked Dave Jamison, a labor reporter with Huffington Post, to come talk with us. Dave, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, good to be here.
So, you know, I look at this, and again, you know, the center of the world is, in the labor world, seems to be the South.
Yeah, this is a huge deal, especially after Chattanooga a couple years ago. That's where the UAW lost that big election at Volkswagen. It was kind of a squeaker. It was a really painful one. Now they're giving it another go, and you know this has long been their goal to unionize an entire large auto factory in the South, and they poured years into this campaign at Nissan in Canton. And this is the culmination of it. So it's a very, I think, exciting and unnerving time for workers down there who've been involved in the campaign.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Now, I remember that Volkswagen campaign where you had politicians coming out and, you know, threatening workers that, well, we won't give state subsidies and you're going to lose your job, coming from not just, you know, the Volkswagen folks, but also politicians. Are we seeing the same thing in Mississippi?
It's kind of a different dynamic. We are seeing some of that. You know, Phil Bryant, the Republican governor of Mississippi, weighed in the other day saying, you know, workers should vote it down. You've got some local mayors in the town surrounding the facility saying vote it down. But what's a little different here versus VW? VW had a stated position of neutrality. They did not run, you know, this anti-union campaign, and it, at times it even looked like VW basically was pulling for the UAW, which was a unique circumstance. Nissan's very different in that they are doing what is typical of an employer in the U.S., and they are running an active campaign against the union. So whereas in Chattanooga there wasn't. Well, there certainly was internal pressure within the plant. There is a lot more here in this case. So there's both external and internal pressure going on now. And this is what you have whenever, you know, look, most union votes go down. You don't even see them in the newspaper. You know, every day the National Labor Relations Board puts out election results, and in a lot of cases people didn't even know these elections were happening. This is a very different case where lots of people are watching this because of what it could mean for Mississippi and what it could mean for the South more generally. And of course, Republicans, the unionization rate in Mississippi, I don't need to tell you, is very, very low. And, you know, the Republican politicians there want to keep it that way. And so everybody's keeping a close eye on this thing.
Yeah, I mean, because this could be, again, you know, we're always looking for that one spark that's going to, you know, ignite a wave of organizing. And look, you know, as someone who studies labor history, it's concerning to me that, you know, I go back and I think of some of the great battles of the past where the communities, I think of the Autolite strike in Toledo, where the community was 100% behind the workers. And yet, you know, you've got these companies now who are using community support to put them down with this fear of, well, you're going to lose this and all your businesses are going to fail. And it just seems to be an interesting dynamic to me.
Yeah, and you know, down there right now, you've got both sides kind of fighting, you know, through proxies. The UAW has done what looks to be a pretty smart job of rallying a lot of civil rights groups. The state NAACP has been on board with them. You know, Nissan, on the other hand, has you know, rallied, you know, obviously, as you'd imagine, the business groups against it, but they've also, you know, found some local pastors to speak out against it. And, you know, in talking to workers, it's a really, really interesting calculation that they're making down there. Because, look, the reality is there aren't a lot of good-paying blue-collar jobs in that area. You know, right. It's Mississippi. Wages are really low. The Canton plant has been really good for the area. It's been there 14 years now. And a lot of them will tell you, look, you're lucky to have a job in the Canton facility. There aren't a lot of jobs that pay $25 an hour if you don't have a college degree. And but, you know, the rejoinder to that, the pro-union workers will say, look, I was told I'd hit $25, you know, a decade ago. And it took me, you know, it took me 10 years longer than they said it would for me to get there. And, you know, they point to the frozen pension, the rising health care costs. And they say, yeah, you know, this may be a good job for the area. That doesn't mean that, you know, we shouldn't have a mechanism to hold the company accountable. And so that, you know, what Nissan is trying to convince people and its allies is that, hey, look, this plan has been a godsend. Do you really want to rock the boat bringing in the UAW here? And that's a pretty compelling argument. Like, one worker who's voting for the union told me, he said, look, when you got a guy who was making $8 or $9 an hour before the Canton plant came along, he becomes really scared of jeopardizing his $25 an hour job, even if he feels like Nissan hasn't treated him fairly.
Right. And as I understand, I mean, working conditions are a huge part of this as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's workers will bring up safety issues when you talk to them. UAW notes that there's been some OSHA complaints recently. And so that is a big thing. And, you know, I was talking with one worker yesterday. She said, look, you know, I've been in the plant 14 years, and, you know, my managers move me around willy-nilly, and I have no say in it. You know, she's like, seniority kind of means nothing around here, and I want it to mean something. And one really interesting element there is the use of temps. There are a lot of temps in that place. And, you know, especially if you're from Michigan, you don't think of an auto plant as having, you know, lower wage unstable work like temp jobs are, but there are a lot of temps in that factory, and even those who are not temps, who you know are have been in the factory a long time, are good standing Nissan employees, they say, hey, look, we want to lift up those temps too. You know, we don't want Nissan to be able to rely on temp workers they have all these years, because they pit us against each other. You know, one worker was telling me over the weekend, he's like, you know, when you get your year-end bonus from Nissan as a Nissan employee, you know, it may not be as high as you'd hoped, and what they'll tell you is, well, hey, sorry, but we got to pay these temp workers some bonuses too. And so the two groups, I think, feel like they get bounced off of one another, which is really common when you've got kind of a two-tier system going on inside any workplace.
Yeah, I mean, it's like they've created a two-tier wage system to pit people against each other, because, you know, you're saying that they make like $25 an hour, the full-time people, but, you know, I just read an article that said, you know, the Kelly Services people, because I guess that's the temp agency they use, they pay between $13 and $17 an hour.
That's right. And even if you are a Nissan employee, it's going to take you years to get up to that $25 an hour. And you know, there's just no guarantees with a contract temp job. And it's interesting because they work right alongside one another. You know, a woman was telling me this weekend, she said, look, I work directly across from a temp on the line. That guy works just as hard as I do. Why shouldn't he be making more money and enjoy job stability the way I do?
Yeah, and the other part of this is, especially from the temp perspective, because as you know, if your career is doing this job, you kind of have an idea of how it's supposed to be done and how you do it safely. You bring a stream of temps through that, you know, maybe they've done this, maybe they haven't. Who knows what happens to the working conditions?
Yeah, I think there's could be obvious safety implications to that too. That's, you know, the whole idea of having kind of a stable union job is to you know, have a high level of experience in the work and to not have much turnover. And, you know, I think having a large reliance on a temp workforce can obviously diminish that.
So when is this vote going down?
It's going down Thursday and Friday. And, you know, don't ask me how it's going to go, because who knows? I mean, obviously, unions, they don't file for an election unless they think they're going to win. But, you know, I think obviously the way things go down there, I'd expect it to be a tight one. And who knows what happens between now and then. You know, the truth is it's a very it's a pretty intense atmosphere. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, there were some more allegations flying one way or another about what's going on down there. And you know, there's always the possibility for more unfair labor practice charges. And you know, the union is claims that Nissan is playing dirty. You know, the general counsel for the labor board did file charges against Nissan, you know, earlier this year, saying that, you know, the company basically threatened layoffs, you know, the managers threatened layoffs if workers voted in the union. Obviously, that's illegal. You can't do that. That hasn't been settled yet. You know, nothing's been proven at the board. But, you know, that was the general counsel agreed with the union that enough to bring charges against the company. So it's, you know, it's pretty heated down there.
Yeah, and you add into that, you know, those kind of threats, the captive audience meetings, the constant, you know, the constant barrage of anti-union literature on the job. And it's just it's a hostile work environment. And look, I've talked to people who have been through this. It's generally the company who's, you know, got their thumb on people. And it's always curious to me when you get that kind of treatment, you know, why it is you wouldn't immediately repel from it.
Yeah, I think it can go both ways. You know, obviously, you know, companies wouldn't do run these campaigns, and in a lot of cases they bring in, you know, outside consultants and law firms at great expense to run this. They wouldn't do it if it wasn't typically effective. I mean, there have been studies showing that when companies do avail themselves of that stuff, that it weakens the union's hand in the election. But in a lot of cases, people, they recoil from that. And, you know, people are smart, and I think in a lot of cases, they may feel they're getting, you know, spin from management, and it can backfire against the company. But I don't know that's normally the case, or companies probably wouldn't do it. But, you know, what's going on inside the plant now is you know, workers are seeing a lot of their managers wearing vote no shirts. They're having these big group meetings. They call them roundtables, where everybody sits down and a manager, you know, goes through some slides and tells you, you know, they say they're giving you facts, but obviously the facts come with a distinctly kind of negative connotation when it comes to unions. So this is what all, you know, often goes on, not just in a big deal factory election like this one is, but, you know, in any workplace where there's going to be a union vote. You know, management often tries to push back. They say they're just giving you facts. They're going to give you information, but it's always, you know, reflects negatively on the union, and that's what the UAW is fighting right now. You know, they're trying to rally troops from the outside, but, you know, it's inside the factory. That's Nissan's territory, and the company is trying to persuade workers right now, and they've got, you know, 3 more days to do it.
Yeah, I go back to something my grandfather always said: if a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you don't need something, you better spend two to get it. And, you know, you look at all the money Nissan's spending on telling these workers why they don't need it. Again, I go back to you better figure out you need it. Because, and thanks to the Trump administration, and maybe you can give me a little thought on this, the last line of questioning, because, you know, you look at all of this money Nissan's spending. There was a persuader rule that the Obama administration had put in to let people know, shareholders know, how much companies are spending on union busting. That's going by the wayside, I guess, though, right?
Yeah, it has. You know, the whole idea there was to shed a little more light on this world of consultants who offer what they call indirect advice, right? So if a company is, you know, gets some, you know, union buster on retainer or whatever, you know, they'll have to disclose that to the government if that guy comes into the factory and starts giving speeches and such. But if he's just telling managers, kind of, you know, just running them as puppets, telling them what to say, then the company doesn't have to disclose that to the feds. And, you know, the Obama administration wanted to change that, but that's going to die now with the new administration.
And here's a place where it would be nice to know how much they're actually spending on this union busting campaign.
Yeah, and I don't know whether they have any outside you know, firms involved. I can't speak to that. But, you know, what's really telling in this election is Nissan is running television ads in the local market. And, you know, they're, what they're doing there, obviously, they're trying to reach the families of workers. And so that gives you an idea of how big a deal this is when, you know, a company is gonna pony up to run ads to, you know, try to persuade people kind of on the fringes of this to get and to really try to reach the community and turn the community against the union. It tells you that this is probably a little bigger than the factory itself.
No, I mean, it's a whole ideology. Dave, I appreciate the thoughts. I'd love to have you come back as this finishes up and as it moves forward to keep us informed on what's going on.
Yeah, we'll keep a close eye on it. Thanks for having me, Rick.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much, Dave Jamieson. He's a labor reporter there at Huffington Post. You want to check out his work, we'll get a link at thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back. Stick around. This is The Rick Smith Show for working people.
We got to get organized. We got to do it today.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.